Hello! This is Season 1, Episode 3 of the Science Dog Podcast. So today we are talking about dietary protein. We examine the levels that we see in foods today, a bit of history regarding protein and health in dogs, and some new research that opens up yet another can of worms regarding the concept of overnutrition in our dogs and the health effects of perhaps providing too much of a good thing when we feed our dogs. The title of this piece in the Science Dog blog is Protein, Are We Feeding Too Much? To read it, just visit thesciencedog.com. Protein levels in some commercial dog foods have increased dramatically over the last 15 years or so. While there are many factors that drive dog food trends, this particular change occurred, at least in part, in response to pervasive misperceptions about dogs. The first is that dogs are obligate carnivores. They are not. And the second involves beliefs that dogs' diets must contain very high proportions of meat. They actually do not. These feeding trends aside, what actually do we know about correct dietary protein levels for our canine companions? How much is enough? And are there risks associated to feeding too much? Although precise protein levels that are optimal for dogs still elude us, probably because, like most things in science and nature, there really is actually no single perfect value to be discovered, we do have a pretty good idea of dogs' minimum protein requirements. We also have a pretty good understanding of their minimum essential amino acid requirements, thanks to companion animal nutritionists who were working in the early 1980s. Using this information, AFCO, which is the Association of American Feed Control Officials and is the organization that provides standards and nutrient profiles for pet foods, has set the minimum protein content for adult dog foods at 18% in a food containing 4,000 kilocalories per kilogram. For growing puppies, the minimum is 22.5%. Knowing this, let's use an example of feeding Stanley, my 2-year-old toller. Stanley's daily energy or calorie requirement is about 1,000 kilocalories or calories per day. If Stanley is fed a food that contains AFCO's minimum level of protein, 18%, Stanley would be consuming about 45 grams of protein each day. Of course, most foods contain more than the AFCO minimum. If instead I fed Stanley a food that contained 26% protein and the same energy density, Stanley would then consume about 65 grams of protein a day. So, let's bump that up to a level that is not uncommon to see in today's commercial pet foods, 36% protein. When fed this food, Stanley will be consuming about 90 grams of protein per day. You get the picture. The difference between 45 and 90 grams is substantial. The higher protein food literally doubles Stanley's protein intake. Just for a bit of perspective, the current recommended daily intake, called the dietary reference intake for humans, of protein for me, a 125-pound adult human female, is 45 grams, quite a bit lower. But as we see with a visit to any pet supply store, the protein content in many dog foods is 30% or more. Some are even higher than 40% protein. So why is this? A bit of history can help us here. There have been several protein trends for dog foods over the last 50 years. So first, let's look at the protein and kidney health connection. Prior to the mid-1980s, it was assumed that feeding a high-protein diet to dogs contributed to the development and progression of chronic kidney disease. This theory originated from a set of studies in laboratory rats rather than in dogs. As an aside, the studies actually used male rats that had been genetically manipulated to naturally develop kidney disease. Yeah, that is a bit of a problem. While this theory was finally tested in dogs, it was discovered that dogs do not react like genetically manipulated male rats. Rather, using methodologies that were available and accepted at that time, the researchers found that dietary protein did not appear to be a contributing factor in the progression of chronic kidney disease in dogs. This evidence was supported by studies from separate groups and included both experimental models of kidney disease and dogs with naturally occurring kidney disease. Moreover, further work reported that feeding sufficient, not excessively high, levels of high-quality protein to dogs with mild or moderate kidney disease was actually helpful rather than detrimental for disease management. So this is score one for the pro-protein movement. So next up in our little historical journey was protein and weight loss. Overweight conditions have become an enormous, no pun intended, problem in pet dogs. As a result, an entire body of research has accumulated that addresses dietary approaches to treating or managing canine obesity. Some of this research has found that overweight dogs lose weight more efficiently when they are fed a high-protein, low-carbohydrate diet compared with when they are fed a diet containing more moderate levels of both nutrients. A variety of manipulations of the high protein helps weight loss paradigm have now been studied and have fueled a new set of over-the-counter and veterinary prescribed foods that contain elevated levels of dietary protein. So, point two for high protein diets. Finally, beliefs that dogs should be fed as obligate carnivores, or as wolves, pick your myth, are pervasive. Sadly, the pet food industry has jumped onto this runaway train and now produces entire brands that are dedicated to the belief that protein levels in foods can never be too high, nor carbohydrate levels too low. Despite the fact that dogs' actual protein needs are much lower, it is not unusual to find extruded dry dog foods with protein levels of 38% or more. Raw foods often have percentages that are even higher than this. Today, there is a plethora of commercial dog foods targeting owners who desire to feed their dog like the domesticated predator that they believe him or her to be. Not surprisingly, these foods tend to sell very well. So it's 3 points for the win in the high-protein movement. However, it still brings us to this question, is all of this protein really necessary for a dog's health? And actually, is it good for our dog's health? The erratic pendulum of dietary protein may be swinging once again. A recent study conducted by researchers at Kansas State University and funded by Hill's Pet Nutrition examined the effects of feeding 3 different levels of dietary protein to adult dogs on their metabolomics and on their gut microbiomes. So what the heck is metabolomics? Well, this term, along with its close cousin, the gut microbiome, are really all the rage in nutrition research these days. Metabolomics refers to the collective and analytical study of metabolites in the body. For our purposes, these are the end products of protein metabolism that are found circulating in the dog's blood or excreted in their urine or feces. There are a lot of these, and so analysis of their trends and patterns provides valuable information about an animal's metabolic state and about their health. The gut microbiome refers to all of the microorganisms that are naturally found in a dog's intestinal environment. These organisms, primarily different species of bacteria, have numerous health effects and are also a direct source of many of the metabolites that are studied in metabolomics. So keep note, though, that this is a new study that was not even a glimmer of a light bulb when the earlier protein levels and kidney function work in dogs was conducted in the 1980s and 1990s. So what this means is that the study of metabolomics and the study of the gut microbiome really have provided much more information about the health related to different nutrients than what we were capable of doing 30 or 40 years ago. So what does this new study tell us about protein levels in our dog's food? So in this study, healthy adult dogs were fed either a low 18%, medium 25%, or high 46% protein diet for 90 days. The source of the protein was dried chicken and soybean protein. The authors state in the paper that the protein sources in these foods were, quote, high quality. Data provided in a supplemental table do support this claim. Protein digestibility values in these foods were about 90%. So let's look at the results. It was theorized that feeding a high-protein food would lead to an increased proportion of undigested protein reaching the large intestine, where it would be subjected to degradation by gut microbes. This could subsequently impact both the gut microbiome and the dog's metabolomics. Here are their major findings. First, kidney function. Metabolites that are identified as uremic toxins and associated with kidney dysfunction increased significantly in blood, urine, and feces when dogs were fed the highest protein food. While some of these compounds originate from the normal breakdown of protein in the body, such as urea, others were postbiotics, compounds that produced by protein-degrading bacteria in the large intestine, which were then absorbed into the body. That's kidney function. There were also results that had to do with inflammation. Feeding a high-protein food resulted in significantly higher serum and urine levels of gut-derived compounds produced by proteolytic or protein-consuming bacteria. Two of these, indole sulfate and p-cresol, are classified as pro-inflammatory compounds in the body. Simultaneously, compounds that have anti-inflammatory properties decreased in serum and urine in response to feeding the high-protein diet. So not good for inflammation. Third, proteolytic gut microbes. Fecal pH increased when dogs were fed the high-protein food. This increase was expected and has been demonstrated in many other studies. A protein-induced increase in intestinal pH indicates higher activity of proteolytic bacterial species. These are bugs that ferment protein. And reduced activity of what are called saccharolytic bacterial species. These are bugs that ferment fiber and resistant starches. Several of the end products that were produced by the protein-fermenting bacteria are considered to be potentially harmful. Similarly, there was a reduction in bacterial end products that are classified as beneficial when the very high protein food was fed. So, what's the takeaway here for dog folks? The authors of this study concluded that, quote, the results indicate that consumption of high protein food over the long term may result in increases in metabolites associated with kidney dysfunction, inflammation, and proteolysis. So, it's important to realize and to emphasize, as the authors of this paper do, that when the metabolic changes that occurred when a high-protein diet was fed are considered to be potentially harmful, all of the dogs in this study remained healthy. The measured indicators, metabolomic and gut microbiome changes, are still relatively new approaches to studying and monitoring dogs' response to dietary changes. So although the early research discussed previously concluded that protein was not a significant risk factor in the progression of kidney disease in dogs, this new research forces us to take another look at this issue. Remember, this is how science works. It's also of note that although the protein sources are not well described in this study, all that we are told is that the protein comes from some combination of dried chicken and soy protein, the digestibility data do suggest that the foods contain high-quality protein sources. But not to put too fine a point on this, the negative effects of feeding a high-protein diet would be expected to be exacerbated in foods that contain protein of lower quality. This would occur because a higher proportion of poor-quality protein would end up in the large intestine as substrate for protein-fermenting species of bacteria. So, to dog owners, what to do? Well, personally, I take this information as evidence suggesting that our dogs should be fed high-quality foods, especially high-quality protein, in which protein levels are moderate, higher than the minimum, but are not excessively high. Certainly, we need additional studies and more evidence. Regardless, we should accept these data as an indication that indeed we maybe actually can feed too much protein to dogs. So that said, it's time to pull out my soapbox. And there's an elephant in the room here, because what this study really suggested to me is that in addition to protein, should we start examining issues of overnutrition in our dogs? Here's what I mean. The study reviewed in this essay concerned dietary protein. It asked the question, are there health risks associated with feeding too much protein to our dogs? And their data suggests that there could be potential harm, specifically increases in gut microbiome-derived kidney toxins and inflammatory agents. But protein is not the only nutrient that we should look at. In my opinion, this is my soapbox, remember, overnutrition, providing too much of one or more essential nutrients, may be more of a problem today than we realize. So questions of overnutrition have been raised by several other nutrients by other researchers in recent years, and we have written about this on the Science Dog blog. One is copper, another is mercury, a third are feeding and supplementing with omega-3 fatty acids, both through food enrichment and pet owner supplementation. All three of these are nutrients that really should be looked at in terms of basically having too much rather than not enough in our dog's food. And certainly no one can claim that the overconsumption of one of the most important nutrients, calories, is not a serious health problem in dogs today. The pet food industry has long been held to and has promoted the standard of complete and balanced. There are several flaws with this approach, one of which may be the mandated requirement to meet every single daily essential nutrient need for dogs in a single commercial product, which, remember, and I talk about this often, we never do with our own diets and never happens in nature in any animal other than our domestic dogs and cats. So erring on the side of too much may be arising as more of a problem for our dogs than instances of too little, in part because of this mandate for complete and balanced. So that's all I'm going to say on the topic for now. I'm certainly going to talk about it more in other podcasts and in other Science Dog essays. Thank you for listening. We hope that you are enjoying the Science Dog podcast and the Science Dog blog. If you love science, nutrition, and dogs, we have more learning experiences for you. Visit the Science Dog courses at courses.thesciencedog.com to see a wide variety of webinars and online courses on topics of dog health, nutrition, and feeding management. We have something for everyone: dog owners who wish to learn more about how to best care for their dogs, dog trainers who are advising their students about feeding practices, and veterinary professionals who need more information about nutrition and health. We hope to see you there. As always, references for today's program can be found on the Science Dog blog at thesciencedog.com.